following is a message from the Heritage Meat Shop.
Are you tired of just hearing buzzwords? Do you want to actually take part in the food revolution? Then come on down to the Heritage Meat Shop, located in New York's historic Essex Street Market, on the corner of Essex and Delancey. We have rare breed pork, beef, poultry, lamb, and goat, not to mention charcuterie that'll make you squeal. All raised right, by the right people, so you know they'll taste right. Try the meat that over 100 New York chefs ache for. Come to the Heritage Meat Shop and pick up some revolution today.
For more information, visit heritagemeatshop.com.
Down the house for a burning hot Sunday, 1st of July, coming at you live from Brooklyn. I'm Curtis B. Wayne. That sound familiar? For those of you who like 20th century music, that should be very familiar. That was the quintet of the Hot Club of France. Stephen Grappelli and Django Reinhardt playing the Charleston. And I'm going to talk about Charleston today. Some of you know that I had a very pleasant adventure going down from New York down to Charleston. And I took the train. If you're going to talk the talk, you got to roll with the walk. Since I'm part of this super green, good green world, seemed like an interesting experiment to see what our Amtrak service would be like. And it wasn't so bad. Once I was there, it was fantastic because I walked everywhere. I was staying downtown. But that's not what I want to talk about first. This week, I had an interesting email from a fellow architect out from the middle of the country, out in Iowa. And he had some comments which led me to understand that perhaps he didn't understand the ideas behind why we do Burning Down the House here on heritageradionetwork.org. So I thought I'd spend a couple minutes and just lay out a little bit of the history of the program and why I do it, and perhaps more to the point, why Patrick Martins, who founded the station, continues to have me do it, and what we're attempting to achieve and how an architecture and design program fits in with a pirate radio station that's mostly all about food and beer and wine. Well, it's all of a piece. Everything is interrelated. In this increasingly technological world, there is at the same time a real amount of effort, research and doing, instead of just speakifying, but doing and making an alternative approach to how we live, what we eat, what choices we make, which has everything to do with how we live, what choices we make about where we live, what big business we support or do not support. And this goes across the board. Time and again in various programs related to food and food issues here on Heritage Radio Network are devoted to examining the influence of Big Ag, Cargill, Monsanto. Mostly the minuses of their influences on our food supply and the quality of our food supply. But it goes back and forth, and these are ongoing dialogues. There can be no conclusion about any aspect of organic versus mechanized ag, any more than there can be any conclusion about what religion is the best. But you can argue that some aspects of some religions are more pleasant than others, and you can certainly make a case that the quality of the food that you're eating can have a demonstrable effect on bettering your health. And similarly, we can make an argument that the built environment, to the extent that it encourages contact with natural daylight and being able to see just by looking out a window near to where you work, to see green living things, and to have a better quality of air in your workspace, and to have a better quality of light, a mixture of daylight and, if necessary, some artificial light, but not to have to work, for example, in a space that is over-illuminated with artificial illumination, which was the thing 45 or 50 years ago. That was considered what was desired. If you look at the movies from the 1960s, if you look at the classic movie with Jack Lemmon and Shirley MacLaine, The Apartment, the interiors, those are of the era. Those were the very modernist, most modern and most high-end office spaces that they used in making that movie. It was the real era, not the Mad Men television version of the Mad Men era. And we've come so far, and now we finally have come to understand that, one, that these were energy wasteful, and two, that they were not healthy, and three, that all the other aspects of that period of time that went together, living in a suburb and driving everywhere and being far from the place that you worked and not being able to really get back and forth between work particularly easy because no one wanted to live in the city because the cities were viewed as evil and smelly and violent because the cities had been optimized for the support of industry, which was moving away from the cities, and what was left was just a burned out, worn out infrastructure that no one wanted to maintain. All of these things are aspects of what we are now faced with, and there are numerous overlapping. If you've studied logic as a part of your mathematics training, you know about Venn diagrams. If you take the Venn diagram of Heritage Radio Network, you will find that it overlaps to a huge degree with Brooklyn Grange. And the Brooklyn Grange people overlap with the green consultants with whom I deal with in my architectural practice. And that overlaps with energy consultants that I have, but they also overlap with landscape designers and landscape architects that talk back to people that we know through the radio or through Brooklyn Green, or and it just multiplies. So it's all of a piece, how we live and how we, as the people who are creating the built environment, we architects and those of you who are the future of architecture, who are my principal constituency in terms of listeners, what we do with all of these ideas is all of a piece with the quality of the food that we eat and the practices that farming undertakes in terms of whether it's going to deplete the soil so totally that it cannot function anymore to raise crops. All of these food issues are all of a piece with the decisions that we make every day in every aspect of our life. That's part one. Two, for whom is burning down the house performed? Oh, you may think that it's just we come in here and we talk, but in fact, if you listen to anybody's interview who is willing to be candid, Dick Cavett, Studs Terkel, even I suppose Charlie Rose, if you got a hold of him, it's not just sitting down and talking like you're talking in your living room. We have to have a certain amount of preparation. On the average, it takes me about 8 hours for a one-hour program to prepare properly. So this is not just coming in and shooting the shit. It's a performance, and I'm glad to do it. For whom is it performed? primarily for those of you who are the upcoming cohorts who will be the future architects, those of you who are still working through your internship or overseas, those of you who are not in the United States or North America, English-speaking North America in any case, those of you who are working, who are architects, but you're working to establish yourselves, you are the people with whom I wish to have a dialogue. Those of you who are already licensed and have a certain amount of expertise and experience, I'm happy if you like listening to some of these programs, but they're not necessarily aimed at you. The other big constituency are interested lay people, and there are a lot of you out there who listen regularly, and I thank you for listening. I appreciate it. One of the things that those of you who are civilians don't understand about our profession is that we're not like Howard Roark. What we do in our profession has nothing to do with the image in the movies currently, or traditionally because of The Fountainhead with Gary Cooper, based on the eponymous book by Ayn Rand, The Fountainhead. We're not a bunch of egomaniac bastards who would dynamite our own building because somebody altered the design. Let's get real. However, on the other hand, you have no idea what we're really like. I would say that probably the very closest approximation of what a real architectural lecture would be the character played by Woody Harrelson in An Indecent Proposal, where he's married to that dishy, at the time anyway, she's getting kind of old, Demi Moore. And she's propositioned, sleep with me for $1 million, some scummy old rich guy, right? But there is a scene where the Woody Harrelson character is giving an architectural history slash theory lecture. And I'm sure it was written by someone who actually was a lecturer because it was real. However, that's just a passing thing. For you to have the opportunity to hear the kinds of things that we speak with each other about, I think will do so much, well, I hope it will do a great deal for you to understand what our concerns are should you find yourself in a position of wishing to do something with your house or your office. Perhaps you will have a better way to engage with us in a way that will be happy and productive for both parties, for us and for you. I think that by extension, all of these cooking shows that are all over the planet, and also here on Heritage Radio Network, do a great deal to educate people in terms of developing their palates. So if to any degree, however slight, that I'm able to raise your understanding of the issues that go into making architecture and raise your architectural palate, then I would consider what we're doing a success. Now, to digress, but not to digress, lately, those of you who are in the eastern United States know that we've had some terrible storms in the mid-Atlantic. Here in the northeast, it's hot. Out in the far west, we've got all sorts of fires going in the Rocky Mountains. It's been hot, and it's just been intemperate, and some of us believe that that is an aspect of climate change. Other people say it's just bad weather. Set that aside. Our ancestors lived with bad weather. Our solution, increasingly over the last 50 years, has been to shut out nature and to use mechanical means to make our lives pleasant rather than working with the powers of nature. And this will probably change. If you listened to the conversation that we had with James Howard Kunstler a couple of weeks ago, he would have you believe that it's going to peter out very soon, and without oil, things really change a lot. I am not convinced one way or the other. We'll see. However, it doesn't matter whether oil runs out. It is a very good idea in terms of conserving the natural resources that we presently have for us to return to some of the energy saving and let us say, a natural built responses to severe weather. And so in our second part, I want to talk a little bit about my visit to Charleston, some of my observations about traditional Charleston houses, and this wonderful annual music and dance festival that happens down in Charleston called Spoleto. Let me look at my checklist here and see if there was anything else I want to talk about in terms of why we do this. No, I think I've pretty much flogged that issue to death. I'm very happy that more and more people every week are listening, and that's why I usually close with keep the faith, because in a way we have to keep faith that things will improve, that there is such a thing as progress, and that if there's any reason that there is such a thing as a licensed profession as architecture, it is to make things better, not to make sculpture on the landscape. That's what sculptors do. And not to make monuments to themselves. That's what dictators do. Let us be neither dictators nor sculptors, but rather architects, pulling all of these disparate factors together. Because, one last piece about the format. I almost forgot. Our musical breaks. The reason that I have musical breaks of a certain length, and the reason that I pick the music, is because it is generally, perhaps not in the very beginning, but over the last, 100 programs or so, it's topical. That is, it relates to what either we've been talking about or whatever we will be talking about next. And the length is of a duration that is intended to give not only us in the studio a break, but you, if you're listening at home, get up, make a cup of tea. If you're listening in podcast at your place of business, and I know a lot of you do, get up, move around. This comes directly from the educational theory of Rudolf Steiner. You know the Waldorf schools? They were founded by him. Some Waldorf schools are actually called Steiner schools. It doesn't matter. Rudolf Steiner was a mystic and an architect, and sometimes during his career he was also the founder or the inventor of biodynamic farming, a major aspect of which is that soils are amended by using ground to a fine powder, ground quartz crystal. And we know that biodynamic farming works, but we really don't know why it works. There are mystical explanations. But this all comes out of this wonderful world of about 100 years ago, in which Rudolf Steiner and people that he knew were experimenting with new ways of being. And so, brought forth to the present, I'm using one of Steiner's educational philosophies, which is that if we break with some music and you get up and you dance around or you move, you'll remember what we talked about right before the music more than if we hadn't. It's not just interesting sounding noisy filler. In commercial music use, in commercial radio, they'll use a little bit of music, but it's a ramp way in, or a segue into some sort of a commercial break. We don't have that many commercial breaks here. For me, it's intended, it has a use, and so when there is music, it's going to run for at least 2.5, 3, sometimes 4 minutes. Get up, move around, take a break. We'll still be here. If you're listening live, you won't miss that much. If you're listening with podcast, you don't want to listen that long, you can roll it forward. You can pause it. My intention is that you would enjoy the music that I have selected. And if not, well, you're going to be taking a break and you're going to be walking around and it doesn't really matter. But it is important and it is vital to the format of Burning Down the House. That's all I've got to say. Now we're going to take a little break related to something that I witnessed in Charleston. Let's have our next musical piece. Thank you. burning down the house. 1st of July, 2012. Says Curtis B. Wayne. That is the prologue from Philip Glass's opera, Kepler, which was staged for the very first time in America during the Spoleto Festival in Charleston, South Carolina. Beginning right before Memorial Day. That was on the Saturday night before Memorial Day. I was in attendance, and it was a very nice production. Not exactly an opera, but I'm not here to get into musical criticism too much. More like an oratorio with sets and costumes. Not a lot of people actually talking to each other. Certainly nobody dancing around and breaking out into an aria. But it's a long way musically from that music back to the Charleston in the 1920s with Grappelli and Reinhardt playing. Now, a lot of my northeastern friends have not been to Charleston, South Carolina, and I highly recommend it. The Spoleto Festival was started in the late 1970s by Giancarlo Menotti. Those of you of a certain age will remember Menotti because he's the composer of a little operetta called Amahl and the Night Visitors, which played every Christmas time. I believe it was on NBC. It's a story guaranteed to tug at the heartstrings of white America, white Protestant America in the 1950s. There are these strange kings traveling, and this is first century BC or so, and they come to a stable, and there's a crippled little stable boy who helps them out, and these kings are unloading their caravan. This is in the desert someplace, and there are all these marvelous treasures, and Amahl asks these kings, "What's up with the loot?" And they sing about how they're in search of a newborn king who may have been following this constellation, and when they get there, they'll find this new king, and we're going to give all these presents to this new king, and as the night unfolds, there's a lot of singing. But anyway, Giancarlo Menotti wrote this, and then at the end of the opera, Menotti's opera, Amahl and the Night Visitor, little Amahl says, "Well, this sounds so wonderful, but you know, I don't have anything except my crutches. You never know, a king might need some crutches. Can you take these crutches and give them to the baby king?" And they say, "Wow, okay, all right, we may leave." And then the stable boy is cured. Anyway, so Giancarlo Menotti came to Charleston, South Carolina, and he really liked it. And he thought that Charleston should have its own festival. And so he named it as a counterpart to the Festival dei Due Mondi, which happens every year in Spoleto, Italy. And by the way, I've been told very sternly, in a nicest sort of way, of course, that it is Spoleto, not Spoleto, because there's only one T, S-P-O-L-E-T-O. It's not Spoleto, which would be like stiletto, the knife or the shoe. It's Spoleto. And it's a wonderful, wonderful experience. The whole town becomes one big party. Very hot. It's very warm there. What we're having in Brooklyn and Manhattan right now is pretty close to the kind of weather that they were having 6 weeks ago in Charleston, in the high 90s and high humidity. But they have ways of dealing with it, in part because of their traditional architecture, which we'll get to in just a little bit. And so You have to be there to understand it. Now, hurricanes do come to Charleston from time to time, and war has been to Charleston. The British Army burned Charleston during the American War of Rebellion, also known as the American Revolution, but I kind of like to think of it as a popular uprising, because we didn't change the form of government all that much from the British other than to get rid of the king, but we kept the bicameral system that the British had. So instead of the House of Lords, we have the Senate. Instead of House of Commons, we have the House of Representatives. We have a chief executive, a president, not a king. We don't have a prime minister. But the similarities are pretty clear. But the British burned Charleston. So there was a big building boom at the end of the 18th century. And there are houses that were built in the 1790s, 1800, and so forth. I think some of the oldest houses go to about 1770, and somehow they escaped being burned. But there is a traditional style of a Charleston house, and you see it in houses both grand and humble. It's a narrow house, goes deep on the lot, and to one side, because the houses are typically only one room deep, and they'll be three or four stories tall, mostly three stories tall, but very tall stories. To one side, there will be a porch on every floor. They call that a piazza. And to the side of the piazza on the lot, there will be a garden running the depth of the lot. Now, in many cases, the 20th century has seen that these gardens were turned into driveways. But in some cases, the gardens have been maintained. They keep the cars someplace else. And so it's a very wonderful way of dealing with very hot climate, because these porches, these piazzas, are almost as wide as the rooms that they are shielding. And because they're tall, the floor-to-floor heights are really quite tall. They're at least 15 feet, I would say, in most of the more grand houses. I have to admit, I did not go around with a tape measure. Next time. And they catch the breezes. They're very good breezes coming off the ocean, because Charleston is close to the ocean, not right on the ocean, but there are two rivers on either side of this peninsula that form the colonial historical center of Charleston. You have to understand that agriculturally, back in the 18th century, there was a lot of swampy land surrounding the coastland, and that was planted with rice and indigo and tobacco. But agriculture in the hinterlands, and you got to Charleston by boat. You weren't coming by stagecoach. So if you approach by land, you're going to go through a whole lot of stuff that isn't particularly pretty, which is not unique. Every American town, if you approach it by rail, you're going through, let's say, you're not going through gardens, with the exception of some places in Virginia where Amtrak runs right down through the middle of a street, and you're seeing people's front yards just right out there. We'll get into that in another episode. So Charleston and Spoleto make this wonderful setting for musical events happening all over town. On the first whole night that I was in Charleston, they had set up in front of an old customs house bleachers, and people sat on the steps, and people sat in the street, and they put up a portable bandstand, and they had a huge big orchestra and some fantastic singers, and they were singing highlights from Porgy and Bess. You know, that American opera by the Gershwins, right? And I looked for some music to illustrate Porgy and Bess, but I really couldn't find anything that was anywhere near as good as what I heard there at this year's Spoleto in Charleston, South Carolina. But if you walk around the historical downtown, especially south of Broad, as they say, there's Broad Street, runs across the peninsula. South are the older, more fabulous houses. You'll see that there are tall floors, and where there are gardens, you know, originally they were kitchen gardens, because the kitchens are on the ground floor, because you've got the garden right there. And then you'll have sleeping rooms further up because then the breezes can cool them. I have to say that the downtown portion of Charleston is so beautiful and so well restored after Hurricane Hugo that it felt unreal. It was more beautiful than anything I've ever seen in Beverly Hills or Greenwich, Connecticut, or the more posh areas of London. I mean, if you took Sloane Square in London and you planted it with palm trees and you put it near the ocean, you'd start to get to what Charleston is like. And I really didn't see any litter downtown. I mean, the sidewalks were so clean, I felt that I could just walk around in my socks and I wouldn't get dirty. I have a major crush on Charleston. Were it not for their weather, the people there were incredibly generous to me and very friendly. I spent several memorable days. While I was there, I was able to interview some of the people involved in the American College of Building Arts. Now, if you go way back in the archives of Burning Down the House, you'll see that about a year and a half ago, I spoke with Simeon Warren, who is the dean at the ACBA. And I was able to meet Simeon in person, and also Carrie Forrest, and also Gina Waddell, who is like the, as she says, is the hurricane. Gina, a solver looking for a problem, who was my fixer and hooked me up with all sorts of wonderful people there in town. But I want to do right by the people at the American College of Building Arts. So I'm still doing post-production work. Jack Inslee, if you hear this particular episode, Jack, my hat is off to you for your skill in doing post-production work. I'm doing it myself, and it's a bitch, man. There's just a lot of wading through a lot of audio files that I've got in order to pluck out the really good stuff. I will perhaps do that next week. I do have one little sampler of something that I captured when I was at the ACBA. Let's hear about 30 seconds of that. This is Curtis B. Wayne. I'm here at the American College of Building Arts with Lucas Adams, and we're looking at... Oh, isn't that wonderful? A jail block... for the ghost horse, because of course the ACBA is in the old Charleston
jail.
Yes, it is indeed in the old Charleston jail, and they have most of the jail blocks are gone. Most of the bars are gone, although some of the bars are still there. It's this fortress-like building that is now populated with teaching rooms, studios. There is stone carving there. There's also plaster molding and plaster work. They have another campus in another part of Charleston where they do blacksmithing and heavy timber framing. I mean, you know, heavy timbers. I'm not talking about 2x4s. Both traditional building arts, and also they do learn computer-aided drafting. And we'll talk more about that, I hope, next week. But the work that they are doing, to me, is all of a piece with what we are trying to accomplish here at Heritage Radio Network, which is to spread the word about what quality really is. And after we start to understand what quality is, and that's a slippery, slippery topic. I mean, I read all 497 pages of Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, that classic from back in the hippie days, where Robert Persig goes on and on and on in search of quality and the metaphysics of quality. He doesn't quite get there, but I think that a lot of us really do understand what makes something good. And once we understand what something good happens to have as features or elements, then we can have discernment and we can develop that. Because I do believe that all of us here at HRN believe in progress and we do believe in improvement. And that's why we do what we do. And that's, you know, I see that so much at the ACBA there in Charleston, South Carolina. They understand where we've come from in traditional craft, and they're applying it with modern tools and traditional tools. And we in architecture have a lot to learn or to rediscover about where we've come from and what we can learn from the past, as our friends who are foodies have learned what we can learn from the past. The whole reason that there is Heritage Radio Network is because there's Heritage Foods USA and the preservation of heritage breeds of turkey, chicken, pork, beef, fish now, and goats that taste better. It's all of a piece, which is exactly what Rudolf Steiner would be telling us were he still alive, that everything influences everything else and that there is the possibility of improvement by learning from what has come before, which is incredibly unmodern because it is the hallmark of modernity to say that whatever came before is just absolute shit. Throw it out. Let's just reinvent everything right from now and use the tools that we have. Shit, we haven't even solved the problems of systematic and endemic underemployment that was caused by introduction of industrial methods of manufacturing. I mean, we have a lot to learn from the crafty world and the working it out yourself with your hands world of 10,000 years of our ancestors' experience. And a little piece of that here we will examine from time to time on Burning Down the House as a part of the Heritage Radio Network tribe. And so, my friends, I have to say, keep the faith. Thank you for listening. But always, I had to do it my way. Thank you, Mr. Shannon, for having written me.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.